Ten misericordia de ellos, de nosotros y del mundo entero.
Por tu dolorosa pasión.
Ten misericordia de ellos, de nosotros.
Last night, in Kansas City, Kansas, close to 200 people gathered in a parking lot behind Tequila KC for a vigil in Spanish. They came to grieve and pay tribute to those who died in a mass shooting at the club Saturday night at 10th and Central. 4 people died, 5 more were shot and injured. The vigil drew a tight-knit community in support of all those who lost friends, lost family, and lost a basic sense of safety and well-being. Police say all 4 of the victims were Latino. I'm Gina Kaufman. This morning on KCUR Central Standard, we're going to step back and get a clear picture of what happened as far as we know, and then we're going to hear about the people and communities most profoundly affected by this senseless act of violence, how they're coping, what happens next. For now, KCUR's Ellie Moxley joins us to talk about what she heard and witnessed on the scene over the weekend. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Gina.
When did you first realize something was happening?
You know, honestly, I was asleep. The shooting happened just before 1:30 a.m., and I found out about it a little before 7. Actually, an editor called me and said, hey, I was on call this weekend. You need to get out to Kansas City, Kansas, to 10th and Central. So I got together as quickly as I could and got out there about 7 o'clock. And
A.M.
A.M., 7 o'clock a.m. And at that point, there was still a pretty large perimeter around the bar as police were investigating. There were still a lot of things on the scene that kind of spoke to what it had been like the night before. For example, there was an SUV parked in the middle of the street with all the doors open. And we learned from one of the police spokesmen that, you know, one of the injured had actually tried to drive themselves away from the scene and were intercepted by an ambulance that took them to a hospital.
What do you know about the people who died in this shooting? 4 people died.
You know, we know some of the names at this point. The police have not released them because they're still notifying families. So we're trying to be really respectful of that. But we're just hearing stories about people that were deeply involved in their community, that were fathers, were partners, were, you know, good young men that were just out, you know, doing what they would typically do. Tequila KC is very much, it seems like, a neighborhood bar where people get together. We've heard stories about birthday parties and karaoke and just, you know, kind of, I mean, we all have that place that we go, right? It sounds like one of those places.
Well, you talked to a woman by the name of Celeste Trevino about one of the men who died. She'd been dancing with him before he was shot.
Pretty sure he still had my lipstick on his cheek when he died, because I remember kissing him on the cheek and we were just talking and dancing, and the next thing I know, like, he wasn't there anymore.
Ellie, talk to me about your conversations with Celeste.
You know, Celeste spoke to a lot of journalists. She was very upset, understandably so. I think it was very difficult for her to be there. She mentioned that, you know, she never wanted to, you know, walk by the bar again if she could help it. You could just feel the raw emotion coming off of her. I mean, we've all been in that moment, right? When we're just starting to make that kind of connection with another person. And then that was ripped away from her. And there was another moment when she was talking that I think really spoke to how close-knit this community is. She was talking about this kind of friend of a friend that it sounds like she's hung out with a few times. And then she kind of pivoted and mentioned that one of the other victims who died was her brother-in-law. And started to talk about what a good father he was to his children, who are 4 and 6 years old. And I think it just speaks to the fact that, you know, people who were at the vigil last night didn't just know one person who was affected by this. They oftentimes knew many, several. This is a deeply connected community.
You also talked to Liliana Villanueva about a man who she remembered this way.
Oh, when we would ride bikes up the streets in the alleys on 10th Street, we would always get together. My brother, him, his older brother. It was just everybody in the neighborhood.
It's so painful to hear. And, you know, we've all had those people that we've known forever like that. But to lose someone violently who you've known in that way, it seems like it would really tear at the fabric of a community.
I think so. I mean, you know, I think one of the things that's really important to keep in mind when you're covering this, it's always kind of tough to be a journalist in that situation because, I mean, your heart is breaking for these people at the same time that you're trying to do your job and be as professional as possible. And it takes a lot for a person to come up and share their story with me and other journalists. And I try to honor that as much as I can. And, you know, I think I tweeted something to this effect yesterday, but I don't think any of us know until the moment that something like this happens to us how we actually would react. You might think, I'll be that person that's really put together that can articulate my memories of that person and really try to honor their legacy. And, you know, there were folks that stood up at the vigil and said, you know, there are families that want to be here, but they just cannot be right now.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. What do we know about the suspects in the shooting? Have they been caught, charged? Do people know who they are?
We do. We've identified the suspects at this point. The police have. They actually have one in custody. They have been charged in this crime. We're still waiting for a lot of that information. I know that the newsroom right now is working to try to find more information about these individuals that police believe opened fire at Tequila Casey early Sunday morning. So I have a feeling that that's going to be coming out throughout the day.
Ellie Moxley, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thanks, Gina.
Ellie provided KCUR's breaking coverage of this incident Saturday night into Sunday morning, and she's been following the story. Now I want to hear more about the community she was alluding to with a member of that community who's also a leader in the community, Edgar Galicia of the Central Avenue Betterment Association. Edgar, thank you for being here. I could not be sorrier for the circumstances.
Thank you for having us.
Tell me what Central Avenue means to you.
Well, Central Avenue as a whole, the central area, is a city of hope, a way out of our hardship, and a battleground for quality of life.
Can you explain that to me?
Well, all the people that have come to live in Wyandotte County, in the east side of the city, have come from different places in the world. I know we're talking tonight about the Latino community, or today, but we have people from all over the world, and they come and find a way to make a living, grow, create families, and build community.
How did you hear what had happened?
My phone rang like crazy, and people were asking all kinds of questions, from the, are you okay? Were you there? To what are we doing next? And why did this happen? Answers were in need, definitely.
There was a vigil last night, as we heard. Can you tell me about it from your perspective?
Yes. So I was there trying to learn of the victims. But so as a member of the community, Central Avenue Betterment Association works with all the business owners and all the building owners just to get the community thriving and working as a whole. I knew the people who manage the club, the bar, and I know that they recently got ownership of it. They just recently did, and they started transforming the place. It was like a private club, one of those 70s, 80s private club. That was the last one of the clubs, the private clubs left in the community. And it was dying, and this family came and got it, bought it. And so they start inviting friends and family, and they start celebrating birthdays and things that you don't do necessarily at the bar, but they were having fun and they were enjoying themselves. And all of a sudden, this type of thing, nonsense happens and destroys their circle and damages everybody's perspective.
What is your sense of what the community needs right now, of what your community needs right now?
I truly believe that our community needs to remember where we come from, why we're here, because we've gone through hardship, but or integrity stands or beliefs stand. Everybody, it does not matter what race, shape, color, size they are. We have a very diverse community in Kansas City, Kansas. All of them have invested largely into the community through thick and thin. And so we can handle these. We don't want to handle these. This is not something we want to happen, but we're working all together to make it not be.
When you say that you need to remember where you've come from, can you tell me more about that?
Well, we all come from hardship. We came here for opportunity. But none of us are looking for opportunities to be given. We're looking to build opportunity, to create that. And that's what we're going to continue doing.
When you talk about that, I wonder if you do have concerns about how your community is perceived when you clarify to me that you don't want to be given opportunities, for example. Right now you're in grief, and it breaks my heart to think that you have to consider the additional concern of how do people perceive my community?
Well, it is not like that for the longest time, due to the aging of our community, the social movements of residents back and forth, our community has gone through really hard times. Our buildings were dilapidated, our streets were full of trash and problems. But I would say 10 years ago, everything started turning for the better. Everything started cleaning up. New businesses came about. The commercial corridor is booming today. If you ever want to experience the Mexican culture, all you have to do is go there, and you'll be there, and you'll enjoy the best food available, and festivals, and community gathering together. And this place is a new business, per se. This is a new family coming in and investing into what has been there and bringing it back to life, and bang, this happens. What I want to ask people is to continue believing in ourselves.
Obviously, this is tough any way you look at it. It's hard, especially to provide comfort when you are suffering too. So when an entire community is affected by something, you know, who is it who has been stepping up to offer that kind of guidance and support? Is that you?
I'm one of many. I'm not the only one. We have strong leadership, both from the government to community engagement, community groups, the business owners. We all participate somehow. It's not a man's band.
What are the questions that weigh most heavily on you as this story unfolds? What do you feel that you need or want to know?
I want to ask everybody to come up with solutions rather than looking at the challenge. This is a very challenging situation, but first of all, this is an isolated situation. It is horrible, but people need to know that in the last 3 years or so, crime has gone down 23-27% in general in our area. We have parties and festivals and quinceañeras and the whole gathering in church and community. And we have always had, no problems, no challenges, no crime. Accidents happen here and there, but again, those are accidents. But never something like this. And I want everybody to know that this is just one time, and we are going to take care of this. We're going to back the families, help the business owners, and work with everybody so that we don't need crime, or we don't need to get angry and damage each other.
It sounds like you don't want this incident to define you.
Definitely.
Is there anything that you want to tell the rest of Kansas City about the people we lost or the community that those people were a part of? How you want this to be talked about and what you'd rather not hear a lot of in the next couple days?
People will talk. People will make up their own minds. But also, people can give chances. And what I would like to remember from the people who left us is that they have families and they were lobbying and they have friends and they cheer for the Royals and the Chiefs and they were part of the city.
I understand that there is another vigil planned for tonight on Central Avenue. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So we're gathering on 13th Street and Central at 7 p.m. and we'll be walking from 13th Street on Central Avenue to 10th Street and Central. On the way, we're going to stop by the vigil, the altar that was built yesterday night, and do some lighting of candles and visit with the family. And then we're going to meet at Lally Park, which is 10 and Central, and have a conversation about what is going on and hear from the community what they're feeling. So everybody's welcome. We're inviting everybody to join us. This is a peaceful walk, and this is just walking for community.
When you said earlier that you were going to be really backing the families who have lost people, helping the businesses regain their footing after this incident, how do you do that?
First, by reminding everybody that we're strong. Secondly, by looking at everybody's situation and knowing that their emotionality has been shaken. And so working with them, there are organizations, behavioral health and other organizations that can assist us professionally, and they're embedded into our community. So conversations and not stopping in our plans, not stopping in our ground. We're going to continue walking.
I want to go back to KCUR's reporter, Ellie Moxley, for just a moment. Ellie, how do Edgar's statements today sort of tap into some of the same things maybe that you heard from people as you did your reporting?
You know, I could just tell how deeply this community was feeling what had happened. I think that everything that you're saying about the Central Business District is very true. I have some really fond memories from last year going to the Dia de los Muertos parade, and it was amazing, and it truly was the best food I had probably eaten in months at the time. But, you know, I think that this is, I think we saw it last night, this community is coming together, and I think that whenever something like this happens, I think that outsiders especially want to kind of cast some judgments on the people that it happened to, the community it happened in, and I think we all need to have the grace to learn more about the people. I say this a lot after these events, that I always try to read biographies of all the people that were killed, that we lost, because I think we need to remember that each of them are people just like us that have friends and family and hopes and dreams.
Well, Ellie Moxley, thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Edgar Galicia with us from the Central Avenue Betterment Association. Thank you, and I'm so sorry for your losses.
Thank you.
KCUR will continue coverage of the mass shooting that happened Saturday night in Kansas City, Kansas. But coming up on Central Standard, we will be discussing a new book about religion, community, and politics in the Midwest. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay with us. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and Liz Lenz is the author of a book called Godland. It is about her troubled search for a spiritual home and religious community in the Midwest while her marriage was falling apart in the aftermath of the 2016 election. It's also an investigation into what her personal journey might say about the state of the Midwest right now overall. Liz Lenz, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. You started out really just trying to understand what your own challenges were about as you were searching for a religious home, and you ended up writing a book about a whole lot more than that. Can you kind of explain that?
Well, I had done the crazy thing of trying to start a church, which I don't recommend, but it had fallen apart. It was 5 years of my life. During that time, I'd had 2 children, and it just imploded spectacularly with you have to read the book for it, but there was an attempted coup of a Methodist church. So just to tease that a little bit. And it was, I mean, it was terrible and it was crazy. And I felt really bereft because I felt like that was my last attempt at finding a center of faith that wasn't toxic and wasn't repressive. And it was something I had tried to create and I couldn't, even I, you know, I couldn't create it. And as it fell apart, I live in Iowa, and we were gearing up for the caucuses, the 2016 caucuses. And there were all these conversations I was hearing on public radio and in the newspaper about centers of faith in small towns disappearing. And I really connected with that. You know, I understood that loss. And so I started exploring it, and I wrote a magazine article for a place called Pacific Standard. And that story came out right before the caucuses. And then Indiana University Press said this should be a book. And so the whole summer of 2016, we were going back and forth over what this would look like. And that was before our current president was elected. And then the moment he was elected, the book just, it just became so much more necessary.
Well, can I jump in and say,
yeah,
one of the things that started happening culturally at that moment was people on the coast saying, maybe we need to understand certain regions of this country better, and people all over the country saying there are divides between us that we can't even begin to understand. We are all so different from one another. How can this be? How can these divides exist? How can we not know each other better than this? And it seems like you are partly offering an answer to that question.
Yeah, I think I'm offering an investigation because there's so many divides and there are so many misunderstandings in the media and otherwise, as we know from living in the middle of the country, that I think I'm just offering a more clear picture. Answers are really hard to come by, but I want us to see people for who they are in their full complexity. So yeah, you know, did some of my neighbors vote for Donald Trump and did that hurt me, you know, and hurt America? Absolutely. But were they also the people who bought me chairs when I was divorced and had no money and moved out? Like, yes, that is also true. So it's this like deep, complex life and country that we live in, and I want us to see it with like the full nuance on the page.
Well, let's back up and tell a little bit more of your story. I mean, you and your husband started a church with some friends because the churches that you were able to find and kind of tried out one after another did not feel right to you. Why not?
Well, it's the classic American divide. He was very conservative. I am very liberal in our politics and in our approaches to faith. And every space we found, I didn't fit, because we were finding places where he felt comfortable, but where I was not feeling comfortable. And it was always very, you know, like I would speak up and then be told to stop speaking, you know, it's just a silly thing.
But you know what? I want you to explain that a little bit more, because I don't know. I
don't lucky.
I don't go to church. I am not Christian. I don't know.
But you do know what it's like to have your voice silenced. I mean,
yeah,
I think,
but I guess I'm asking you to describe the spaces and what was uncomfortable and why.
Yeah, you know, I think of a very specific example of, you know, I had gone on this trip, and I was one of the only women on the trip, so I spent a lot of time with a female minister, and we were in El Salvador, and I had at least then a better understanding of the Spanish language. And so we were going around just talking to people, and I was practicing my Spanish. And from that time, I had these like really great stories. And when I came back, I wanted to share.